Se volete credermi, bene. Ora dirò come è fatta Ottavia, città ragnatela. C'è un precipizio in mezzo a due montagne scoscese. La città è sul vuoto, legata a due creste con funi e catene e passerelle. Si cammina sulle traversine di legno, attenti a non mettere il piede negli intervalli o ci si aggrappa alle maglie di canapa. Sotto non c'è niente per centinaia e centinaia di metri. Qualche nuvola scorre. Si intravede più in basso il fondo del burrone. Questa è la base della città, una rete che serve da passaggio e da sostegno. Tutto il resto, invece di levarsi sopra, sta appeso sotto. Scale di corda, amache, case fatte a sacco, attaccapanni, terrazzi come navicelle, botri d'acqua, becchi del gas, girarrosti, cesti appesi a spaghi, montacarichi, docce, trapezzi e anelli per i giochi, teleferiche, lampadari, vasi con piante dal fogliame pendulo. Sospesa sull'abisso, la vita degli abitanti di Ottavia è meno incerta che in altre città. Sanno che più di tanto la rete non regge. Hundreds and hundreds of feet. A few clouds glide past. Farther down, you can glimpse the chasm's bed. This is the foundation of the city, a net which serves as passage and as support. All the rest, instead of rising up, is hung below. Rope ladders, hammocks, houses made like sacks, clothes hangers, terraces like gondolas, skins of water, gas jets, spits, baskets and strings, dumb waiters, showers, trapezes and rings for children games, cable cars, chandeliers, pots with trailing plants. Suspended over the abyss, the life of Octavia's inhabitants is less uncertain than in other cities. They know the net will last only so long. The slender sticks that rise from the ground at a great distance from one another and are lost above the clouds support the city. You climb them with ladders. On the ground, the inhabitants rarely show themselves. Having already everything they need up there, they prefer not to come down. Nothing of the city touch the earth, except those long flamingo legs on which it rests. And when the day are sunny, a fierce angular shadow that falls in the forest. There are three hypotheses about the inhabitants of both. That they fear the earth, that they respect it so much they avoid all contact. that they love it as it was before they existed, and we with the spyglasses and the telescopes in the time war, they never tire of examining it. Whether Armilla is like this because it is unfinished or because it has been demolished, whether the cause is some enchantment or only a scene, I do not know. The fact remains that it has no walls, no ceilings, no floors. It has nothing that makes it seem a city, except the water pipes that rise vertically where the house should be and spread out horizontally where the floor should be. A forest of pipes that end in taps, showers, spouts, overflows. Against the sky, a lavabo's white stands out, or a bathtub, or some other porcelain, like late fruit still hanging from the bowl. You would think the plumbers had finished their job and gone away before the bricklayers arrived, or else their hydraulic systems, indestructible, had survived a catastrophe, an earthquake, or the corrosion of thermites, abandoned before or after it was inhabited. Armilla cannot be called deserted. At any hour, raising your eyes among the pipes, you are likely to glimpse a young woman, or many younger women, slender, not tall of stature, luxuriating in the bathtubs or arching their backs under the showers suspended in the void, washing or drying or perfuming themselves or combing their long hair at a mirror. In the sun, the threads of water falling from the showers glisten. The jets of the taps, the spouts, the splashes, the sponges of sound. I have come to this explanation. The streams of water channeled in the pipes of Armilla have remained in the possessions of nymphs and naiads. Accustomed to traveling along underground veins, they found it easy to enter into the new aquatic realm, to burst from multiple fountains, to find new mirrors, new games, new ways of enjoying the water. Their invasion may have driven out the human beings, or Armilla may have been built by humans as a votive offering to win the favor of the nymphs, offended at the misuse of the waters. In any case, now they seem content, these maidens. In the morning you hear them singing. Sette giorni attraverso boscaglie, chi va a Bauci non riesce a vederla ed è arrivato. I sottili trampoli che s'alzano dal suolo a distanza l'uno dall'altro si perdono sopra di lui, sostengono la scena. Ci si salva. A terra gli abitanti si mostrano di rado, hanno già tutto il tempo lassù, preferiscono non vedere. Nulla della città tocca il suolo tranne quelle lunghe lampe da finicottero a cui si appoggia e nelle giornate luminose un'ombra traforata e angolosa che si disegna sul fogliame. E ipotesi si danno sugli abitanti di Bari. Che odino la persona, la rispettino al punto di evitare ogni contatto, che l'amino come era prima di loro, e con cannocchiali e telescopi puntati in giù, non si stanchino di passare in rassegna, foglia a foglia, sasso a sasso, formica per formica. Mr. Palomar does not aim so high. He would be content to ring. Out of the dancing wave rises more than the point that dotted. And it is here that it becomes happy. This occurs at some distance from the shore. There is time for the foam to be swallowed and again invade the world, emerging this time from below like a carpet rolled along the shore receiving a wave. But when you expect the wave to roll, realize it is no longer the wave but only the carpet, and as this also rapidly disappears, becomes a glimmering of wet sand that quickly withdraws as if it were driven back by the expansion of the drive of the wave to the sand that moves rapidly back to the edge of the consider the indentations of the wave where it splits into two wings, one stretching from right to left and the other from left to right, and the departure point of the convergence or convergence is this negative tip which follows the advance of the wings, but is always held back, subject to their alternate overlapping until another wave, a stronger wave, overtakes it with the same problem of divergence, convergence, and then a wave stronger still, which resolves the knot by shattering it. Taking the pattern of the waves as a model, the beach thrusts into the water some barely hinted tips, prolonged in submerged sandy shoals, which the currents shape and destroy at every time. Mr. Palomar has chosen one of these low tongues of sand as his observation point, because the waves strike it on either side obliquely and overrunning the half-submerged surface, they meet their opposites. So, you understand the composition of a wave, you must bear in mind these opposing thrusts, which to some extent are counterbalanced and to some extent are added together to produce a general shattering of the thrust and counter-thrust in the usual spreading of force. All this would be very simple if at the same time it were not necessary to consider a long wave arriving in a direction perpendicular to the breakers and parallel to the shore, creating the flow of a constant barely surfacing crest. The shifts of the waves that rattle towards the shore do not disturb the steady impulse of this compact crest that cuts them at a right angle, and there is no knowing where it comes from or where it then goes. Perhaps it is a breath of east wind that moves the sea's surface against the deep impulse coming from the masses of water far out at sea. But this wave, born of air in passing, collects also the oblique thrusts born from the water's depth and redirects them, straightening them into its own direction and bearing them along. And so, the wave continues to grow and gain strength until the clash with contrary waves gradually dulls it and it disappears, or else it twists until it is confused in one of the many dynasties of oblique waves that carry it to land. The fact is that from this intersecting of variously oriented crests, the general pattern of the waves becomes fragmented into sections that rise, then vanish. Further, the undertow of each wave has a strength of its own which impedes the newly arriving waves, and if you concentrate your attention on this backward thrusts, the true movement seems to be away from the shore towards the open sea. Mr. Palomar is convinced that if he defines a space, say 10 meters of shore by 10 meters of sea, he can complete an inventory of all the wave movements repeated there with varying frequency within a given interval of time. And he is even more convinced that this is the key which will allow him to master with a very simple operation the complexity of the universe.